he's right here, so. Oh, we topped it. He cold topped it.
Okay. Ready to go. Yeah.
Gate iron.
Oh, we shanked it. Oh, look at that line, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, boy, is he out of sync.
Welcome back to another episode of the Bogey Boys podcast.
You're joined here by Kevin and Mark. As always, this is season 3, episode 25, I think. Victor's victorious, or victorious Victor. Pick, take your pick there, bud.
Okay, so you sometimes you come with none, sometimes you come with two.
Well, I've got all sorts. Horrible Hovland ruined the day.
Was a bit mad, wasn't it? The way he just
fucking
come out
Fitzy.
Of fucking hell, Fitzy.
Sort it, Scotty.
It was unbelievable finish,
mate,
wasn't it?
Honestly, I was texting at my cousin Liam and then like speaking to you about it. Like, and I was like, this is a match play now. And then it sort of seemed like Scheffler, obviously, his putting isn't amazing. Like, if he could put it, there'd be nothing down for anybody.
Yeah, it's poor, isn't it?
And I just felt like, I think he thought he only had to beat Fitzpatrick.
Well, yeah, and that's the theme of the podcast today that I'll talk about, and we'll discuss his momentum, because you're right. If he's just looking at Matt Fitzpatrick and thinking, I only need to beat him, and he is beating him, and then he gets 2 shots advantage of him. I think, did he get to 3 shots at one point? He's probably thinking, I'm there, I'm home and dry. Did he take his foot off the gas? And then all of a sudden,
I think when it got to 3, though, I think Hovland had a little streak. He was preferred the head, had a streak where he got tied or close to him.
He got within 2, yeah. I think there was at a stage Scotty had a 2-shot lead over them both.
Yeah.
And you know, but I think Scotty is more than likely looking forward rather than his rear view mirror.
Of course, because he's thinking like the last stretch is pretty hard and like people have been dropping shots there. So if any,
especially on 18. 18
is
a tough hole.
17, 18 is that.
I mean, yeah. Hovland stiffs it there and knocks the putt in, which is ultimately the one that gives him the win, isn't it? But yeah, I think momentum's a big one, and same on the DP World Tour on both the women's event and the men's event. You know, there was certain elements, which we'll come on to later, of where if things dropped or certain things happened, you know, it could have been a totally different story. So before we get on to the golf reviews, though, played Chilwell, Northern Ireland, didn't you?
I was hoping, like,
we'd slide by
the fact that.
Oh no!
You've had a new baby. Congratulations!
Thank you.
And lots been going on. That might have slipped your mind.
No.
I think
fresh in the memory. That
is it.
Yeah.
Oh my word!
You've got to let the people know, haven't you?
Do you know what? Like,
maddest 85 of your life.
It was mad because I went and I was like, I thought, you know, I don't care. Like, obviously, a few people were recognizing me and that because obviously we're the sponsors and things, so I felt like a bit of a celebrity on the first tee, but like that's whatever. I took that nerves.
Fucking hell.
I took them nerves under my belt and then just nailed one off the first. Started quite well. And then just got up and down 5 times in a row. I was like, this is great, this is grindy.
A day before, you had a chipping lesson as well.
I've had a couple of lessons, to be honest. Like, done all my yardages, which was, that is another thing I have to talk about. That made me, but ruined me as well. Because, like, Ian from Bolton, if anyone needs the yardages doing, that is where you need to be going. Because his service is unbelievable. Like, he groups everything. He does your lofts, your lies, changes things half a degree. And you hit 3 balls and he gets your groupings like perfect, asks you what your miss is, where you want it, what your bad shot is. Like, he proper in-depth goes into your clubs. But we were there, like, he was only booked in for an hour. And then, like, because he was that, like, fine-tuning the irons, it went on for like 2 hours. And
because there was so much work to do, do you mean?
Well, no, because because the clubs are different and I had new wedges in the bag, he had to do a little bit more calibrating. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I get it.
And, like, the next day, he was like, I've only done half your set, and I know you're playing Chilwell tomorrow, so do you want to get in the morning? So I was like, all right. He's like, we'll get here for 6. I was teeing up at 8:30, and I didn't leave his thing till like 8:10. So I was like,
Straight on the tee.
But I was warmed up, obviously, but then, I don't know, I think it was a mixture of, like, the bunkers are like fucking concrete. So I just went, I was level par, I went on the 10th, knife one, duff one, knife one, chop one out, and then two putted for an eight. I was just like, wow.
It's a par five. That 10%,
yeah. And then tripled the next from the middle of the fairway, doubled the next from the middle of the fairway, missed the green, and just my head was gone. Three putted that. Then I had an eagle. Then I had another triple. Then I had a bogey. Then I had a double. And I was just like, whoa. Shot 50 back nine. Level par 50. With an eagle.
That's fucking
nuts. I didn't have a par on the back nine.
You shot 50 with an eagle back nine.
Didn't have a par.
That's unbelievable golf, that.
Triples, doubles.
Has that ever happened, do you think?
I honestly believed I'm a pioneer in that. But Ian at Walton, I'd recommend people going to him because I've never seen anyone go that in depth. Like,
yeah,
half a degree changing the lie angle and it was making it a fade.
It's great, isn't it? The technology.
Like, it's unbelievable. Yeah. And then he bases everything around the 10 to 12 yard gap. So if you hit your 7-iron, you get comfortable with your distance, then he'll work around that and gap everything 12 yards. So you've got a perfect, and then he's like, go down the shaft, up the shaft, you can take 6 yards off, like, you can move it forward. Like, everything, like, where you're moving your hands and putting things, and if you keep the same swing speed, like, the amount of detail that he goes into it, roll versus carry, and like, oh mate, it's just...
Well, that's why the golf's so good at the moment, isn't it, at the highest level, because their golf swings, they don't vary as much as amateurs do, they? So, whereas obviously you're a good golfer, your swings...
Thank you, mate.
No worries, mate, yeah. Your swing is pretty consistent, your swing speed's pretty consistent, but you won't be as consistent as the top guys. So there will be days where you'll be off on them numbers. These guys on tour, they're never off. No. So if they're getting the calibration exactly right and fine-tuned to exactly how they're swinging it, you can understand why they're so consistent all the time. Obviously, the great golfers, they swing it unbelievably well, but so many of these top golfers now very rarely hit poor shots because everything is in tune with exactly how fast they swing the ball because there's so much information and so much data in golf now. So you can see why we're starting to see over these last 3, 4, 5 years, Tiger was an exception to the rule, but over these 3, 4, 5 years, we're seeing so many golfers at that top level and competing. You know, Max Homer's come from Korn Ferry Tour, struggling to keep his cards, to being established one of the best players in the world. Now, that comes from hard work and obviously making the right changes to his golf swing, but it'll also come from the technology help as well.
Made the technology, like, even like down to, like, I remember a few years back, everyone was going through this little stage in my school with you getting their irons pured. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
And like, he was talking about that, like, saying if an iron's like pured and it goes straight down the line, like, it eliminates so much, like, where the shot can like balloon right a little bit or left, or the flex is different. Like, all them clubs for them top players, like, they are spot on, but it's the same thing as I feel like it's like your pre-shot routine. Like, there's no point in doing a pre-shot routine if you're just going to duff it into the trees. It just delays the inevitable, doesn't it?
Like, if you're
a 20 odd handicapper and then you're going to get all the right equipment and get it all perfect for you, like, it's half pointless.
I don't know, you know.
Do you know what I mean?
I don't know about that because, you know, if you're wanting to improve, you've got to start somewhere. But are you thinking because they're going to be changing the swing?
They're going to be getting more speed. They're going to be like everything's going to change about the game,
and they're getting better.
So it's like,
I think I do agree. I think it's more the overall forgiveness of clubs for your higher handicappers rather than being the millimeter in tune.
That's what I'm saying. But then the better you get, the more fine-tuned that you have to sort of get it.
And that's what I'm getting. That's what the point I'm getting at is, as these top guys, you're talking millimeters, like of a Rory golf swing. He middles it every time, but if he's slightly out the middle, the technology in that golf club will probably give him the same distance and same accuracy.
Well, you've seen that TaylorMade video where they're hitting it, they're trying to hit it off the toe.
Yeah.
And like, Scheffler hits it off the very, very toe and it's a 312.
Yeah.
It's like, when was that ever allowed to happen? Do you know what I mean? But,
oh, yeah. But, yeah,
it was great. I'd recommend anyone to go down to see Ian, like, because it's unbelievable. Yeah.
No, and I think when you get to a certain level, if you're playing Nord or a Merit event, you're obviously a decent golfer, aren't you?
After the appeal on Northern Order of Merit, don't you
Sorry,
mean?
Apologies. Yeah, so, yeah. Me, I haven't played. I've, as you know, my wife gave birth to our second child, Jackson, so...
Jackson.
Just been enjoying
Congratulations.
Lack of sleep, yeah. So we're gonna play Hillside on Wednesday, aren't we? That'll be my first round for a while. So try and get a bit of winter golfing if I can, as and when the time becomes available, because we've got a lot going on.
Newborn winter golf.
Newborn winter golf, clothing brands, Fantasy Golf League. On the Fantasy Golf League, though, we might as well have a little chat about this week is obviously the final tournament of the long season. So, again, thanks to everyone who's got involved so far. And we're actually launching the mini league, which is going to be throughout the fall season. There's going to be 9 events, as with this league that we've got going on currently. It's going to be monthly cash prizes and overall cash prizes, along with some appear on gift cards as well thrown in there. The 9 events are going to be starting from the 7th of September at the Irish Open. We're going to go on the DP World Tour for the Irish Open, the BMW Champs at Wentworth, and then the Open de France. Then in October, we're going over to the PGA Tour, where we'll be doing the Sanderson Farms Shriner Open and the Zozo Championships. And then in November, to finish the last three, we're going to have a bit of a mix. We're going to go the Worldwide Tech Championships, which is on the PGA Tour, one of the final events of the fall season there, and then over to South Africa for the Nedbank Championship, and then the DP World Tour Champs on the 16th to the 19th of November, which will conclude the fall season. We've got some great prizes as well. There'll be £300 cash for the overall winner over the 9 events. The runner-up will receive £200 cash, and boom, third place will get £100 cash. So £600 in cash prizes, and then the monthly winner will get a £30 gift card for a pair on clothing, and runner-up will get a £20 gift card for a pair on clothing. So overall, we're going to be giving away over £750 in prizes over a three-month period. So you can play it for £4 a month through Patreon. And yeah, we hope everyone can get involved, because it's been a great success, and everybody that's playing it this season has given good feedback.
No, it has. Yeah. I think the introduction of stat betting and the automating and putting it online and people can see the picks, I think that's helped us a lot, hasn't it? Like,
yeah, 1,000,000%, because you know you've got the stats there that can obviously influence your picks. We do obviously a preview show every week, which goes on the Patreon that everybody gets access to, where we give our analysis and our reasons as to why we're picking and what we think is going to sway good performance for that event in that week. And then also, you know, you've got the interaction of being able to see the leagues live. You're not relying on us to, like in the past, we used to manually put it all up and post it on Instagram. Now, anywhere in the world, you can log on, play the game, and you can interact with people through the Patreon platform. So I think it's a good deal for £4 a month. We've also
And it's only getting better as well.
Exactly. And we're just working on a rewards program as well. So, you know, in the coming weeks, what you'll start to see is if you are a patron, you'll get rewards across thousands of retailers. Yeah. Across the UK, where you can earn cash back and you get exclusive discounts, and that'll be offered to our Patreon members.
It will. That's just in the old line pipe, that, mate.
One of the many things, isn't it?
Tell me about it.
So if you want to get involved in that, you go to patreon.com and just type in Bogey Boys FGL, or you can go through our social media platform and there's a link in our bio which will take you straight through to the page, or just send us a DM on whichever platform you follow us and we'll give you the information that you need. As I say, for anybody who's not familiar with how the game works, what we do is we split the field on that set tournament into four separate pots, and you get to pick one player from each pot, and points are determined on how well your player performs from that given pot. So yeah, that's going to start on the 7th of September. So obviously that's in a couple of weeks' time. So
we'll get a little post out with all the rules and
regulations
and how to sign up and whatnot. Definitely, this week.
Yeah, so obviously onto the golf stuff then, that's been happening this week. The only bit of golf news I've got is just around the Solheim Cup. The 2023 team is due to be finalised and decided, but the 8 players that get in automatically have now been concluded after the ISPS hander.
Same with the rider.
Same with the rider, yeah. So that was only for America, though.
The America, obviously. Yeah.
So Céline Boutier, as you'd expect, has got in Maya Stark, Charlie Hull, Leona Maguire, Georgia Hall, Lynn Grant, Carlotta Singander, and Anna Norquist. They're all your 8 automatics.
How many Swedes are there? Good few, isn't it? 3? Yeah. 4?
Anna Norquist, Maya Stark, Lynn Grant. 3.
3 Swedes.
Yeah. So, 4 selections, 4 picks. Now, I've had a little look into this. There's 5 players who I think are probably the most likely to get the selection. I think Gemma Driver, looking at that, she's the only European inside the top 50 in the world. That's not yet confirmed.
Right.
And she's had a win on the LPGA Tour this season and a lot of consistent golf throughout the year. So you'd expect Gemma to be part of that team. Mel Reid has had a great run of form recently, playing well on the LPGA Tour, challenging in a couple of the majors as well. So that's number 2. An outsider who's playing really well at the moment is Olivia Cowan. She finished top 10 at the AIG Open and then 5th at last week's event. So she's trending in the right direction. Not won this season. So, you know, that's got to play a part. But again, from the selections that I've put, there isn't many winners in there anyway. So, you know.
What about that Perez who's leading the LPGA Tour? The Ana Lopez Perez.
Ana Perez Trevino.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's who I've got in the pick as well. Yeah. So she's.
Is that another one?
She's currently 97th in the world. Been a pro since 2021. She's currently 2nd in the LET race to Costa del Sol. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think she should get a pick. And then the other one, my 5th one, is Madalena Sagstrom. She had a good season. She's recorded 3 top 10s across the worldwide. So there's 5 players there who I think are probably in line for a pick. Obviously, there's only 4 places. Olivia Cowan might not get in just because of inexperience at that.
I don't know, though. They took Charlie Owen when she was like 16 or something.
Well, that's what I'm thinking, yeah.
It's different, the women's, isn't it? Like,
Olivia's playing very well at the moment as well. Obviously, if you're finishing top 10 in a major and then following that up with a 5th place finish the following week, you know, I think you're trying.
You could take that Nausea.
Which one's that?
The German girl?
Yeah. They could do, yeah.
Who I play with in Saudi.
Yeah.
She's won, beat Charlie Owen in a playoff. And she's young. They love all her.
Yeah.
Well, all the cameras around there. Yeah. At that Aramco.
Well, that's what you'd expect. And I've got some questions for you for the Europe, Team Europe, which we'll come on to in a bit. But yeah, I think getting players in who have got that potential and just getting them in young to give them that experience and that
then
exposure.
It takes away the like, oh, Cowan could go, but she's got no experience. It's like,
that's how you get your experience.
That's how you get, when you get experience by having a go, don't you?
Yeah, that's what I mean. That could take Olivia Cowan from finishing top 10 this year to actually potentially winning a major next year. You just don't know,
exactly,
do you?
So,
yeah, I think they were the 5 players that stood out for me. But yeah, Nausea as well is definitely somebody you could.
I'm more just going off the back of like Charlie Hull, like young, taking her and then. Like that, no, she's like, she's still in school and that, you know what I mean? It's mental.
Yeah, yeah. No, you're right. I do think so. And you see, there's a lot of young people coming through and, you know, winning. And that was evident last week at the ISPS Ando, wasn't it? 19 years old, winning on a birthday.
Yeah, that's crazy, that one, eh?
Yeah, so. And you got any golf news?
Just the American Ryder Cup team, obviously Homer and the Showstoppers and the Shoffley. I've leapfrogged
Brooks
Koepka in a heartbreaking turn of events.
Well, this is part of my birdie bogey bus, so should we get into that?
Go on.
It's that time again, y'all.
The birdie bogey bus, the birdie bogey bus, birdie bogey bus.
Okay, so we'll get into that because it's part of my bogey. But first of all, what's your birdie?
Hovland's back 9, but more importantly, just 3 Europeans in the top 5 and the Ryder Cup around the corner. It's like it's brilliant.
Well, that's it. Mine is the Team Europe Ryder Cup this year and how exciting it is. Obviously, last time out at Whistling Straits, we spoke about it. We got our ass handed to us, didn't we? Pretty much by an unbelievable American team.
There's no pretty much about it. It's exactly what happened.
It is exactly what happened, yeah. But you look at the resurgence of Tommy these last few weeks and how well he's playing at the moment. Hovland and Fitzpatrick hitting form at the right time. Rory and Rahm, they've just been sick all season, haven't they? Hatton just made it into the top 30, so having an extra week of playing competitive golf this week and having a good thing is going to be great for him. You know, you've got rookies that may have an impact. Thomas Dietrich's had a great season. The Højgaard twins, Yannick Paul. You've got Shane Lowry and Bobby McIntyre and Adrian Baronko playing this week. You've got a great chance of getting in there. So
Straka on the bubble.
Yeah, but Straka got in. didn't he? Right on the bubble. So again, similar to Hatton, this could be the week where, you know, if he goes on and has a great week, can Luke Donald say, well, I'm not picking you? Do you know what I mean?
It's exactly.
It's
well, especially if he plays his way into like a where Finau is, or where, like, I don't know, say another like fringe Ryder Cupper who could get a pick, then they play again, like they show like what they're about, and like, do you know what I mean? If they take it to that player, then it's like,
yeah, because you got a couple of players like Sam Burns, Finau in the top 30, that, yeah, so like, the same could, score, you know, but if he does better than them this week, yeah, and they, yeah,
like it just
saying.
Shows like a precursor in it, so
yeah, 100%. No, I say my beard is exactly the same, it's just excited because it was looking pretty grim, but I think obviously with the emergence of Liv and a load of top American players going over to Liv and that uncertainty with the American team, albeit the American team is stronger than the European team on paper, you know, you're looking at it and you're thinking, you know what, it's going to be a lot closer this time, it's home soil, it's just an exciting time to be a European fan, isn't it?
Yeah, well, I think that the home soil thing is like we're sort of still living off the Paris thing.
Mollywood.
Yeah, and then like, so like, you know what I mean, you think, oh, like we done them at home last time, but then like, sometimes it doesn't really matter, does it? You like, if the,
yeah,
the team's
class
better,
is class, yeah. But that's, so, but that's what I'm saying, though. Obviously, you look at that top, like Tommy Fitzpatrick and Hatton, like, probably, I know, probably not fair to include Fitzpatrick in that last season because he won a major, but in general terms, those three, you'd sort of look, and Lowry as well, and think them four, you'd think, not as strong, but in recent weeks and recent form, how well Fitzpatrick played there last week. Obviously, Tommy, over the last couple of weeks, he's been so close to getting that first PGA Tour win. Tyrrell Hatton, you know, all right, he hasn't played amazing, but he has been consistent. He's making a lot of cuts. He just hasn't challenged, but, you know, he's a top-class player, and so you can have a bit more confidence now. You're not just relying on Hovland, Ram, and Rory to get you through. You've got a good base of eight players there, and then, you know, those are the four that are going to get the picks, or whoever gets those captain's picks, you know, who are they going to be? Is it going to be Bobby McIntyre? Is it going to be Thomas Dietrich?
I think McIntyre's already in, you know, from what I've seen.
I had
week.
A look, he wasn't. Wasn't done that little fact check. No, the only ones that are in definitely are Rory and Rahm. They're the only two that are definitely in.
Definitely, because they're in there.
He's in, Bobby McIntyre is in the race to the, not race to the buy no more, is it the DP World Tour rankings.
Yeah.
He's in there for the selection at the moment, but you've still got the Czech Masters and the Omega Championship or Omega Masters these next 2 weeks, which is going to confirm it. But Bobby McIntyre, if it was picked today, he would be in because he's in the category of being getting picked through the rankings and not the world rankings.
So he's close enough, isn't he?
He's close enough to get in that automatic spot, yeah.
Yeah.
But he's not confirmed, yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why Lowry has gone over to play these next 2 weeks, because
to get himself in
or at least impress, because Donald and the Molinari brothers, who, that was another bit of news, wasn't it, Francesco Molinari is part of the vice captains,
you know,
with Eduardo, so the three of them are playing over in Czech this week, so obviously Lowry's got an opportunity to impress and put his arm round Luke while he's over there.
So, what did you say? Rory, Rahm, and Hovland are the only ones that have qualified.
It was only Rory, Rahm, but I think Hovland will have after that win. Yeah. Yeah. They're the only certain ones, and then over the next couple of weeks, there's only two more events left, isn't there?
Yeah.
Over these next 2 weeks before we finalise it, and then it's down to Luke Donald to make his selections. Then, but this week we find out, don't we, who the American selections are. We've got six automatic and six in, and that brings me on to my bogey as well. Obviously, Brooks not making the automatic team for the Ryder Cup. My bogey is that it's even being talked about, the potential of him not getting a pick.
Mate, what my bogey is, like, Zach Johnson saying he doesn't get a chance to see the LIV golfers play. It's like, get on a plane, throw your business expense through the Ryder Cup, or do whatever you need to do, and just fly out and watch them.
Yeah.
Sit on one hole, 4 hours, done.
It's televised though as well, isn't it?
Exactly.
You can watch it if
that
you want
to. That is utterly poor, that, by Zach Johnson.
I think as well, Bryson has made a few comments, hasn't he, where, you know, he thinks he should get a pick, but if he doesn't, he's going to support the team, which you'd expect a classy response from him anyway, wouldn't you? But I think the way he's played, shooting that 58 and doing what he's done, you know, can you ignore him as a captain's pick? But with Zach saying that, it's sort of leaning you towards maybe that's his excuse to maybe cop out and say, do you know what, I'm not going to pick him. But given how Brooks has won a major and come second at the Masters, you can't not pick Brooks. But my bogey is there's even a consideration is that for us to think Brooks wouldn't even get a look in. Because I think behind Scotty Scheffler, Brooks Koepka is the second best player in the world, mate. From a, as an American player. I don't think there's another better player than Scotty Scheffler. For me, is the only other better player in the world right now on the American team than Brooks Koepka.
Mate, honestly, like the fact that the playoffs offer him more points this year, like the way they changed that, like, and then they've all come and leapfrogged Koepka. Like, I'm not saying like they've been out to make that happen, but by adding more points to the playoffs, if someone who can't take part in it, they're going to drop down the rankings, aren't they?
Yeah, definitely. And there's no surprise that Jay Monahan and his leadership team have made it very clear that if you leave the PGA Tour, you're not coming back. I know times have changed and things have changed recently with the potential deal with the PIF, but yeah, I think they probably have set it up that way to make sure that no live players play in it as a potential punishment for going there when they didn't want them to. So
like
if you go there, you
needs know, to get a pick for the Ryder Cup.
If Brooks Koepka doesn't get a pick, it's got to be political. It can't be based on ability.
No, it's not because ability,
it's
not on ability, is it?
No, it's not because it's so clear to see that he belongs in that team. Bryson, you could probably argue, you know, there is also really, really solid players on the PGA Tour that could potentially get picked ahead of Bryson, but at the same time, there's nobody other than Scotty Scheffler, in my opinion, who is playing better than Brooks Koepka.
Well, who else is coming with the experience of them two as well?
Yeah.
Major champions, Ryder Cuppers, like multiple winners.
Part of that team that
big boy trophies
last time.
Part of the team that whooped us. They're playing great. Like, if they don't take them and then lose, I think Zach Johnson should come under some serious fire.
Yeah.
Because he hasn't took the best team available, has he?
As a European fan, if they both don't play, then advantage us.
No,
and
it
especially
is, but
given
I just
how well
don't
our
think it's
playing.
Right.
No,
at
definitely
all.
Not. Definitely not.
What's your bust?
So my bust is watching the FedEx playoffs. Obviously, when it went to Jordan Spieth on 18, he made a bogey, finished bogey, and then it come up on the side that, oh, he's in the bubble, he's on the bubble. And then it went to Tiddle Hatton, hit the lip in the bunker, kicked off, made a bogey. He thought he was out. And then after it had finished, and obviously there was a little bit of talk about the bubble and who's going to do what. There was obviously Denny McCarthy. Kirk made a bogey on the last and missed out. Straka gets in. Like, all this was happening in the top 30 to get into the FedEx playoffs, but you didn't really know what people needed. And I understand it's a fast move and someone can make a bogey and a birdie, but for me, it was just, if you're going to set up a playoff environment, it's good that we've got the champion and everybody's trying to win the BMW championships, but the whole point of a playoff is who's going to get in, who's going to get in the bubble. And they sort of done it. But when I went on to...
I was going
to
say, it's got the numbers at the bottom, hasn't it?
It has got the numbers at the bottom, but it doesn't say, like, it doesn't go over to that person and go, he's got this put, and if he misses this, because they've got the information to hand. They don't say that.
They do. Like, Theo Gallagher had an eagle put, and they're like, this will get him inside the top 30. And then he got a birdie, and then he was like, oh, he's still outside. And then he birdied the next, and he's like, oh, he's inside.
Not on Sky Sports. He never. I don't know what you were watching on.
Yeah, what are you watching on?
Sky Sports. So after we'd finished, right, after he'd finished on Instagram, Jordan Spieth went in to the locker room, and a PGA Tour guy went over to him and said, this is the current situation. There's a couple of guys that can knock you out. This is how it's going to work. Same with Tiddle Hatton, went in and the same thing happened. I just think more effort should go into doing that live. So before the tournament started, like when I was watching it, all I was seeing was little glimpses.
Did you have the sound on? That's a serious question, though.
Of course I had the sound on.
Oh. So you didn't see when Theo Gallagher was putting for eagle what he was saying?
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. And I also seen on the 18th when Jordan Spieth had the putt for bogey and it said, oh, he's still in the top 30. I'm not getting at that. I know that happens. My bust is that they don't put more attention on it.
Mm.
So they don't have it constantly there live. showing that when someone makes a bogey and it's moving automatically. I just think that would give a bit more interaction to a playoff.
Yeah, and then I'm not saying it does put up like where they started and where, like, do you know what I mean? Like Hovland 34th to 10th and like,
yeah, it just, it gives them the red numbers and the red numbers and the green numbers. I get that, but my bus is that it doesn't do enough to give you the interaction. So, for example, Chris Kirk is on 15, makes a birdie, and then Jordan Spieth is on 12 and makes a bogey, and all of a sudden you see it might have players from like 25 to 35 on a little table on the left hand side, and you see Chris Kirk move over Jordan Spieth, and the commentators talk about what happened there.
You're trying to bring live poll systems in, aren't you? There.
Listen, I'm not trying to do that. No, but for me, if I'm watching a playoff event, I want to know who's going to win the championship and who's going to get into the top 30. And it sort of does that. My bust is that it doesn't go far enough.
Mm.
For me, I want to see personally. I want to see that as a competition. I want to see that top 30 being like, especially for the last hour or two of coverage. Because that's what it's about. It's about getting into the tour championships.
Yeah, I honestly thought that they'd done a good job. Well,
you might have been satisfied with it, but I wasn't. And that's why it's been us.
Well, there's another one for you that you're probably satisfied with that I'm not. I don't like the playoff structure.
Go on, why?
Well, like, look at Scottie Scheffler there.
This is your bust, is it?
This is my bust, yeah. It's the bust of the season, this. Scottie Scheffler there, oh, what's he won? Four times or something, or three times. He's played well all season. He's world number one. He's miles ahead on the points. But then, like, in reality, Jordan Spieth can win the playoffs. Yeah. And, like, he's just about scraped through.
Yeah.
And, like, I just don't think it's fair.
Yeah, but
10 shots isn't enough.
10 shots is enough. Come on.
People can do in 10-shot deficits in one round compared to a season.
Yeah, but it's still got to be competitive and be fun to watch, hasn't it? So if Scottie Scheffler has already wrapped up the tour championships now, then what's the point in the tour championships?
Like, it's like Man City. They've like wrapped the league up with five to go. It's like, whatever. You just open top, bus it, and get on with it.
Yeah, that's different though, isn't it?
Not really.
That's not really, is it?
It just reminds you. Imagine having a 10-point lead in the Premier League. There's nowhere else to go higher. Like, at least in the Championship playoffs, that like you're playing to get up a league.
Yeah, but in the Championship playoffs, you are playing to get up a league, but you're playing to.
But the champs, they don't ever include the champions. Do you know what I mean?
When you win the playoff, you win a trophy.
Yeah, but the champions automatically go up. So, like, I think Scottie Scheffler can win the whole season, but then still lose. I don't like it.
Yeah, but it's like, yeah, I get what you're saying, but I think it's the only way to have a competitive end of season tournament.
No, it is. But I just think I think you should let the golf decide if it's competitive.
So, if you think that John Rahm wins this week, that he doesn't deserve to be the FedEx champion.
No, I think if he won this week and it's not like a four shot or three, whatever he's got, two shots.
He's three shots behind.
Three shots. So you think all that work that Scottie Scheffler's done over the season and the points.
He hasn't won a major though.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. That's why Rahm's so close to him, because he has won a major. Rory's come second in all the majors. Like, if them three aren't 1, 2, 3 because of the point system, I think it's a farce.
Yeah, but they're not though. Hovland's second, isn't he?
Exactly. That's because he's got fucking double points for this week. Glover's flew up into the rankings because of all the points. It's too top heavy towards the end of the season.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Then playoff events are like triple points, aren't they?
Yeah, but it's coming. It's deciding what's better. Scottie Scheffler not finishing outside the top six for so many events and then winning a handful, or is it Rahm winning more than him and a major? You know, what is it?
It's
is
like
it
the world.
Is it consistency, or is it based on what you win? Like, the only way to do a fair representation of who wins is you play all season, you get 600 points in the FedEx for winning a major, 500 for winning a regular event, 300 for winning a lower event, which you don't play in anyway. So, you know, consistency wise, although Scheffler hasn't won as many as Rahm, he's consistently earned more points and got the wins, which has put him as number one, and you would agree that. But I don't think Scheffler at this point is like the standout number one FedEx player in the number one PGA Tour player. I think,
but he is, though, isn't he?
He is at this moment, but I don't think that should indicate that he should win just because he's there now.
So you think Hovland deserves to be fifth or third or second or whatever he is?
If he wins this week.
So where, Hovland now, he's, where is he, third?
He's second. He's second.
So, like, do you think that's deserved? Over Rory's season, Ram's season?
I don't. I agree with that.
Because it's too top heavy. Towards...
I agree with that. But I do agree with this. Back to your point.
So do you make it all exciting, double points, triple points, whatever, and then they go, bang, you've got a one-shot lead. Get on with it. Two-shot lead. Do you know what I mean? I don't like it.
Yeah.
Well, it's my bust, what's
the alternative is the question.
Just keep it how it was.
So just do it, and
just play and put the points, and if you can't win it, you can't
win
it.
But then the whole point of that was you're giving two trophies away at the end.
You're giving two trophies anyway?
You're not. Whoever wins the Tour Championship wins the FedEx.
Oh, yeah, I remember that actually. Remember when Tiger won it and Justin Rose took the thing. But so what, they keep it out was, sounds?
It's not though, is it?
Why not?
Because you're getting two winners at the end of the season.
No, you're not. You're getting an individual and you're getting an overall.
Yeah, but the whole point of it is to whoever wins this tour, you work all season.
No, I get the point. I just don't like it.
Okay, fair enough.
Do you know what I mean?
Insight to your opinion on this occasion.
Thanks, mate. My little muppet.
Right, let's go on the ISPS hander then. I mentioned earlier in the podcast, didn't I, about momentum? And it was really clear to see in this event because obviously Dan Brown heads into the final round with a five-shot. It was a five-shot lead, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Going into the final day, yeah. And he's playing with Alex Fitzpatrick, who's obviously the one chasing him. Fitzpatrick starts, birdie. Dan Brown starts, bogey par. So he's cut that lead down to...
two.
It was three shots at that point, so maybe he had a six-shot lead then.
Yeah.
I think he must have had a six-shot lead then, yeah. So Fitzpatrick started birdie. Dan Brown started bogey par.
I thought they were 15 and 10, but go on.
The lead was cut down to three shots at that point.
Mm.
Dan Brown makes bogey on three, so the lead is two. And then Fitzpatrick has a putt from about 5-6 foot for par. If he holds that, I honestly believe that this is a totally different ball game to this momentum. Alex misses it, makes bogey. Bogey's the next. And then 5 and 6, Dan Brown goes birdie, and regains his 4-5 shot lead, whatever it was. So when we talk about momentum, I honestly think if Fitzpatrick holds that putt, then gets him within two, he potentially doesn't bogey the next, and he's on a flow. That bogey just sort of cuts his flow, and it's give Dan Brown a potentially bit of breathing space where he's on a bogey par, bogey start. You know, I think that's the turning point, similar to where when Hovland's done what he's done, and Scotty Scheffler's probably thought, wow, what's going on here? He ends up 3-putting 17, Scheffler, doesn't he? To go from 1 back to 2 back, probably because he's tried to hold that, thinking I need this, knowing how difficult 18 is. So, yeah, I think that's the key to the podcast is obviously momentum. This week, in it, what we're talking about.
Definitely.
So, yeah, I think it was the same in the women's as well. Obviously, Pano wins, but at one point she was 4 or 5 back of O'Toole. O'Toole leaves it in the bunker, ends up making double on 13 or 14 or whatever it was. And then all of a sudden, Pano makes a birdie and she's tied with her.
Yeah.
And then, you know, Gabs Cowley makes eagle on the last to get into the playoff. And then...
scenes that one.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like... momentum in golf is so key, as well as playing well, because if you're on a heater and you're doing well and you're knocking birdie putts in, you're applying that additional pressure to the players who are leading, and they're thinking, and they get a bit more protective, don't they? That's what was so good with Tiger, wasn't it? Because it doesn't matter what pressure you put on him, he was relentless and ruthless, wasn't he?
Exactly, yeah. He either put the pressure on or he didn't let you do it because he just took off.
That's it.
But even if you think last week, what was the young lad? Is it Moore or like
Taylor Moore?
Taylor Moore. Like, he was playing well, wasn't he? Like, and then the rain delay came, and then he bogeyed. And
started
started shanking it and being all over the place. It's like that's like a momentum going the other way. But then if you talk about season-long momentum or, like, career momentum, like, you have to look at, like, Matty Baldwin there. Obviously, when we had him on the pod, he's come out and he said, like, he had to take a step back for personal reasons. Didn't think he was anywhere near where he wanted to be. Then he's come back this season, he's won, and now he's like finishing top 10 this week. He's consistently doing so much better. So his life's on a momentum change.
Well, that's it. Great. Yeah, and 1,000,000%. And it just shows you, like, when you look at the stories throughout this season, you know, Matty Baldwin's a great story of obviously somebody who, you know, had to stop playing for a certain amount of time for health reasons, got back, stayed in the Challenge Tour for a number of years, gets a shot on the DP World Tour this season, takes it by the scruff of the neck, wins.
Yeah.
And now he's obviously, you know, he's got that momentum. Same with Dan Brown. His story's amazing. A couple of years ago, playing on the Euro Pro and then playing Challenge Tour, I think he was saying on his post interview, that post tournament interview, that he secured his card a couple of weeks previous, so he was just playing with a bit more freedom, and that freedom obviously shows you, and now not only has he tied his card off for 2024, but it's the following year as well, because he's now in the winners category. So it just shows you, that's another momentum thing as well, isn't
exactly,
it?
Exactly,
you
know, yeah.
Like, golf, it's ability, but it's also mental, isn't it?
Oh,
talk about
percent.
It time and time again, don't we? Like, if you've got the grip between your teeth and you've got that mindset that nothing bothers you, you'll do much better than somebody who, like, allows pressure to get to them very easily.
Of course, yeah.
And money is a big key part of that as well, isn't it? If you've got that financial freedom to swing away and do what you want, or you've got, you know, you've secured your card. Like Eddie Pepperell, as well, another prime example. You know, he was outside the 118 number for keeping his DP World Tour card. He's come in this week knowing he needs to have a good finish to the season and finish third on his own.
Yeah.
Like, that's potentially going to be good enough now to keep his card.
Yeah, it's right. And then another couple of, one of the podcast guests, Marcus Hillykiddle, tied fourth as well. So it was a good showing, really.
It was, yeah. Connor's obviously on the bag for Alex Fitzpatrick, you know, finishing second. We had second.
Dream team, aren't
they? Yeah, they are doing very well, right. Yeah. But you look at, this is a question I wanted to pose about the Ryder Cup. You know, Alex Fitzpatrick qualifies for the Open at West Lancs in a strong field with the likes of Garcia and Matt Wallace and all those there. Gets through and then finishes top 20 in the major itself. Goes back on the Challenge Tour, wins on the Challenge Tour, comes over to the DP World Tour, nearly wins this week, finishing second alone. He's now second in the Challenge Tour order of merit, playing far less events than a lot of them. Obviously, the Open gave him a lot of points, and so did this second place finish in the DP World Tour. But he's now second in the Challenge Tour rankings with a chance to win the race to Mallorca. You know, there's two events to go. He's playing this week in Czech. If he wins this week and then has a top 10 finish next week or challenges next week, does he warrant a pick?
If he wasn't Matt's brother, would you be saying that? If he was just a normal Challenge Tour player and someone had done that, you wouldn't even know about it.
No, but
do you know what I mean? So,
no, exactly. Well, you would, but I get what you're saying. But it is, he's played Walker Cup last year before he turned professional. He's done well. You know, he got a couple of invites last year. He got in the Irish Open.
I think if he won back to back now, yeah. But that's it.
He's got to win back to back.
Yeah.
I think if he wins back to back, he'll probably get an auto. No, back to back.
Don't
a million
you need
percent,
DP World status to be on the Ryder Cup, or is that not a thing?
Well, he will have DP Tour status only now, because he's already, not officially, but he's already got his card for next year now, hasn't he?
On the DP World Tour?
Through the Challenge Tour rankings, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not official. He hasn't got his card, has he?
Hasn't officially got it, no. I don't know.
Is that even a thing?
No, it's a good question, yeah. I don't know. Do you have to be a DP World Tour member to actually qualify for the Ryder Cup? That's a great question. Probably never been in this scenario, but if he does win,
I don't know.
Yeah.
Haven't they took? I remember we were reviewing it when they took like amateurs and that, haven't they? Like, remember with all madness.
Yeah,
I don't know. Things have changed, but yeah. I don't reckon so.
But he played the Zurich, didn't he, with his brother Matt, and he challenged there together as a team. They were leading.
I think if they did, it'd be like a public thing, like a brothers are back, like Molinari's gone, fifth season in. Way.
It would be good though, wouldn't it? The Højgaard twins get a pick and the Fitzpatrick brothers are there. Obviously, Alex has got to do a lot these next 2 weeks to even be considered. I'm not saying that he's like, but the fact that he's in the question now.
Does... I think win-win and an injury to someone who was going to be in and then he gets a pick. I think it's far
away. I mean, win-win, I think you can't not pick him if he doesn't get in automatically. If you go top 20, win on Challenge Tour, second win-win on the DP World Tour, and you don't get picked for the Ryder Cup, come on. Who else has won twice on the DP World Tour this season?
Yeah, but I think it's 2 years, innit?
Does that matter, though, when somebody's playing like that? Really? I get what you're saying, but I don't know. I just think sometimes, like you mentioned there on the women's for the Solheim Cup, you get somebody in early and you give them exposure and that experience.
I know, but like, the women's difference in it, like they have a gamble over there. Like, do you know what I mean? It's like it's a bit much at stake to be throwing in a mad rookie, isn't it? Well, I don't know. Madder things have happened.
Well,
I just don't think Donald's the man for that. Yeah. I think Stenson might have been. Stenson's a bit madder, isn't he? Donald's a bit straight-laced, isn't he?
Yeah. Okay, so, you know, we've spoke about it, haven't we? The top seven who we think are definitely there. Obviously, add Shane Lowry into that, add Bobby McIntyre into that, because they're probably, if they don't get in automatically, they're going to get picks.
McIntyre's going to be in the seven.
But if he's not, he's going to get a pick, isn't he? If he has a couple of bad weeks, he's going to get the pick anyway, isn't he? Because he's won at Marco Simeone as well, hasn't he?
Yeah.
So I think Adrian Maronk, Yannick Paul, Thomas Dietrich, Pablo Larrazabal.
See, I think Straka's got a better chance than all them.
Sepp Straka, yeah.
He's in the top 30 at Eastlake now.
Adrian Ortegi.
Do you know what I mean? Ortegi's creeping about.
There's probably too many players that have done so well over the season to warrant getting Alex in there. But I don't know. I just think the way Alex is playing at the moment and how well he's done in big tournaments. I think this week will be interesting because the Czech Masters, it's a stronger field with the likes of Lowry coming over to play.
See, I know Lowry's like a household name and he's great and all that, but like, if he was coming over to play in an event, it wouldn't, if I was Alex Fitzpatrick, I wouldn't be seeing him as like a threat.
Would you see Tommy as a threat?
Yeah.
Yeah, but Shane Lowry's a major champion.
What? Yes, when? 2020 or something?
What does that matter?
But it's like he's won at one major. It's not like he's playing great now, is it? You know what I mean? Like he hasn't made the top 30.
No, he hasn't had the best of seasons.
Was he playing this week?
No, he didn't make the top 50.
He didn't even make the top 50. Did he make the week before?
He did make the playoffs, yeah.
Yeah. So, like, do you mean he's sliding?
Yeah, what do you mean? You wouldn't be...
Like, you don't see Lowry challenging on the PGA Tour, do you?
Cannot wait for Shane Lowry to win this week, you know.
I just don't see him as a big name threat.
You don't?
Nah.
I do, yeah. He's a household name.
Like, if I was a Max Homer, I'd just be considered... bashing him everywhere around Marco Simeone.
Yeah, let's him.
Do you know what I mean? I think he's got a great personality and loves a Guinness and that, but I honestly, I don't know.
So yeah, Shane Lowry has had 6 DP Tour wins.
When was his last one? Last year, what did he win last year? He won something, didn't he?
He won the BMW Champs, didn't he, last year?
Wentworth,
yeah. Pretty sure he did, yeah. He won Wentworth last year.
Yeah.
So last year, he won at Wentworth.
So he hasn't won for a year.
So he hasn't won for 12 months.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is when you compare that to Tommy Fleetwood, like he's won 6 times on the DP World Tour, won last year, and he's a major champion. And you're saying that you wouldn't be...
Well, it's like you're talking about Fitzpatrick now, the form. Tommy's in better form now, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if Tommy turned up today, he's obviously... What is he, 9th or 10th in the FedEx rankings? He's one of the he's informed best players in the world now. But I just mean if Shane Lowry comes over, I think you're wanting to beat him. He's the man to beat.
Well, do you think he'll be favourite this week?
Yeah, 1,000,000%. Even based on form, I think he'll be good. Just doesn't guarantee he's going to win. You can't guarantee nothing. But I think Shane Lowry, he's 36th in the world.
Mm.
All right, his form's not being the best, but he's an unbelievable golfer.
I don't know. I just wouldn't be scared. Like, I wouldn't be worried about him if I was like Fitzpatrick or something. Like, it's not like a big monster fish coming over. When Dustin Johnson used to come over and play the European Tour, you're thinking, oh my God, he could butcher this place.
See, I think, look, if you look at his mate, yeah, look at the way his last 5 performances in the majors this year, in the Masters, tied 16th, the PGA Championship, tied 12th, the US Open, tied 20th, then the Scottish Open, he finished tied 12th. He missed the cut at the Open. I think recently his form's not being the best, but I do think he's one to watch this week.
No, listen, he's obviously a hell of a man. Like, I just personally, I wouldn't be bothered about him.
Yeah, okay.
Like, I'd fancy my chances against him. Like,
you personally?
Front nine. Chip them 50s off.
BMW Championship review then. Obviously, we've briefly spoken about how good Hovland was and obviously the finish for the Europeans in that event. But again, I just have mixed feelings on it, on how it's a playoff championship. You're getting in the top 30 and there wasn't as much emphasis on that than I think there should have been. I think they can do more.
Well, do you know who that really loved your approach? Seb Straka, because he was in the airport flying home on the Saturday night and he refreshed his phone that many times. He ran out of battery in the airport. He didn't know.
That's definitely me, that.
Yeah, it's you in both sides of things, yeah, isn't it?
It like, is, just, yeah.
Which is brilliant. But
this, I just seen, like, obviously, Seb Straka's done that, okay, thinking he's gone. Tyrrell Hatton, if you watch the, it's on PJ Tour's Instagram page, the video. Tyrrell Hatton, the guy goes over to him, the same guy that went over to Spieth, I don't know who it is. He goes over to him and goes, all right, Till, I just want to let you know about the situation in the FedEx playoffs. And he goes, oh, it doesn't matter, I'm done. So he thinks, if Hatton finished double bogey, birdie, bogey, bogey, and thought that was it, he thought he went to the par in the end to win. But the guy goes over and explains it to him. I just think if they've got like a leaderboard up around the golf course, the same way that they've got, and have like a mini leaderboard, I think that just offers a bit more to the players.
I know it offers to the players who are looking in, but it also adds pressure to the players that are like wanting to make it, so it might fuck them up.
Good.
Yeah.
Pressure situation. You want people to be saying, right, I need a birdie down 18 to get in top 30. Yeah, I'm going to go for this flag. You know what I mean? Or if I chip in for...
You might as well have the crowd going, oh, like if you're going to get that sort of pressure, you might like...
No, but what I mean is there's an opportunity to do more in the playoffs.
No, of course
saying,
there is, yeah.
You know, you're
I
saying...
the whole thing needs scrapping, don't I? So.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you don't like the handicap system where someone's starting a 10-under compared to level. Other people do like that. I think if you make these playoffs a bit more meaningful from a, right, you're going to get into the top 30, yeah. So Chris Kirk, you look at that leaderboard, you know you need to shoot 2-under in the last 4 holes to get in based on what's happening now. So you get very aggressive, otherwise your season's over.
Yeah.
And the commentators talk about that. And then you sort of put a bit more camera emphasis on those players as well. I know all I seem to see was the players in the top 30 you were challenging put out on 18.
No, I know.
And then it just goes, if he gets, oh, he's missed that, he might get in. Or if he missed that, he mightn't get in. I just think a bit more emphasis on that because it is the playoffs. I know there's a championship going on.
It's probably moving too fast though, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I get that. Yeah. I get that. But that's why you have the automation in the background, like moving people up and down.
The
commentators get a little piece in the ear to say, right, we're going over to Chris.
They could say something like, oh, this has happened. And then at the same time, as they're about to say it, so like someone finishes the hole ahead. And then it's like, and then what they were going to say, but what they were going to say becomes irrelevant.
Yeah, but it's good though, isn't it? Because it's fast. They go, oh, I've just said that there, but now this has happened over here, and it's fast flowing. It's not like...
And it's Jordan's wave coming down.
Yeah, exactly. But then you've got, oh, Hovland's on the middle of the fairway here, yeah. Okay. Oh, he's just hit one club. Oh, what a great, another great shot by Hovland. Another great beard. This is fantastic golf, and I get that's good. And on Scheffler, oh, he's not that put a bit far past where you could be going. And then we go over to Chris Kirk, who's got a birdie put here, and if he knocks this in, oh, and you know what I mean? There's more going on than just that.
No.
Championship race, and that was point. That was my point.
Do you know what my point is on this the whole BMW Championships? Like, Rory just doesn't give up. Like, no matter how, like, he's making birdies from all over the place. That second round where he's like, or the first round where he's chipped in, he's made a birdie from like the absolute Bundai.
Yeah.
Like, he's got that grit, and like, he just hits everything with like, conviction, and he's like he's like he's in a war.
But I think that comes with experience.
No, it does. But I think Tommy, I feel like Tommy feels like he's just wandering around the park.
He's a chill guy, and
he is chill. But you can see it like drain right the way through his golf. Do you know what I mean? Which is great because it keeps you relaxed and all that. But I feel like he just needs that bit of fire. Yeah,
yeah.
Like
yeah.
that little bit of like, come on.
Yeah.
Like even when he like makes Ryder a bird,
Cup,
it's like...
Like yeah, Ryder Cup Tommy.
Yeah, Ryder Cup Tommy, but bring that to it, to his like his back nine on Sunday or his back weekend.
I think that going back to the Rory point there as well, I think Rory gets how important every shot and every putt is in the playoffs because he knows, well, right, this is an extra shot. This, if I can finish fourth, third, second year this week, I'm going to be starting 700 instead of 6 or 800 instead of 7. What was interesting at the end of the tournament was Matt Fitzpatrick had a putt on 18 to decide whether Scheffler would start at 10 under or whether Hovland would start at 10 under. If Fitzpatrick would have birdied 18, it would have meant that he was solo second, Scheffler was solo third, and Hovland with his win would have went number one and see, started at 10 under. And I know you hate that, but I think it does add a bit, doesn't it? To like,
It does.
If this putt goes in, Fitzpatrick sorting his European teammate out there and giving him the advantage for the FedEx. We missed it, and now Scheffler. So come Sunday at Eastlake next this week. It could be the
difference.
That one puff from Fitzpatrick could make a difference to decide who wins the Tour Championship. That's what I like about it. Right then, couple more events to look forward to. We've briefly spoke about the Tour Championship. Before we get on to that, the penultimate event on the DP World Tour before we get into the Ryder Cup selections.
There's also one other event, and there's a certain man, obviously Tiger Woods, 91, 92, 93. Won the Junior Am, 94, 95, 96, won heavy the that. US Am, yeah. And then 97 won the Masters. To put that stat up, yes, the incredible scenes. Yeah. But Nick Dunlap won the US Amateur over Neil Shepley, 4-3.
Oh, did he, yeah?
Yeah, this weekend, yeah.
Good opportunities for them. Then he'll get another major next year.
That was at Cherry Hills Country Club in Colorado.
Where's he from, him? Is he an American?
I think so. You think he's American, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, Nick Dunlap, just don't know about that. It doesn't say. But they were all square through 20 holes, and then Dunlap won four of the next eight to seal it off on the 33rd hole.
Amazing.
Bang, done.
Quality. Yeah, but we've got a full European swing in action now. Obviously, we're in Czech this week, then we're in Switzerland the week later, then over to Ireland for the Irish Open, and then BMW Championships at Wentworth. So a lot of big tournaments, and hopefully we'll see a lot of the guys who didn't get in the playoffs or who finished the playoffs come over and support the European Tour a bit more over the next couple of events. But like I say, there's two.
Who needs to do that? Seamus Power, I think.
Think so?
Yeah. He played last week, didn't he? And then he won't be in this week. And then, I don't know, I just think if he's a potential Ryder Cupper, isn't he? If he's got to the top 70 there, top 50, sorry.
Maybe, yeah. I suppose, yeah. You can't write him off, can you? It's hard to sort of classify it because he's plodding his way throughout that season and done well, but you know, is the way he's had the season better than someone like Yannick Paul or Adrian Meronk seasons? And that's the sort of category he's in it for a selection, isn't it?
If he comes over, like it's like if anyone comes over and does well these next two events, like they're gonna be fresh in the captain's mind, like what you said about Fitzy. Yeah. Obviously I think he'd have to win a couple, but
That's one of the reasons why they're there this week. I think Luke Donald and Francesco Molinari, this is the first time they've ever played this event. So, obviously, they don't do that off their own back. They're doing it for a reason. So, they're there to keep a look at these guys, to get a hands-on approach with them. And, obviously, none more so than Shane Lowry, who, contrary to what your thoughts are, he's, he is the main man in the field this week. Obviously, Larathabal, Victor Perez is in the field. Højgaard twins, Yannick Paul, Bobby Mack, Adrian Meronk, they've all got realistic chances,
of course,
of making it to Rome. So they'll be wanting to perform well. One guy who is in the field this week, and there's a lot of hype over him on the PGA Tour since he turned professional, Ludvig Åberg.
Right.
He was obviously amateur world number one, played in the PGA Tour. He's had a couple of top tens and done well. You know, I don't know. Is he in contention?
You might as well open it up to every Tom, Dick and Harry that's coming through.
No, but on your concept of, you know, get these raw players in, give them a shot, and hopefully it's the making of them.
No, that's not my concept. That's just what the Solheim Cup have done.
But I agree with it, though. I think it's good, yeah. Like, you'll never know how good maybe it is too early for Ludvig Åberg, but he's got to wait another 2 years for his next one. And imagine he just obviously turns out to be one of the best players in the world and wins a couple of majors before the next one he's guaranteed in. Would he have gained a lot more going into that next Ryder Cup if he'd have played with a bit more rawness in this one?
Mm.
That's what you've got to think of, isn't it? That the Alex Fitzpatricks of the world, the Ludvig Åbergs of the world, they've played Walker Cups, they've done well, they've done a lot as amateurs, they've turned pro and they've performed well as professionals. So, like we've spoke about different ponds, they've came into these new ponds and they've not been swallowed. They've actually performed well in them. So do you give them a chance?
I feel like if Rahm, Rory and Hovland and Tommy weren't doing like so well to be able to say like, okay, this could half be competitive here, this Ryder Cup on home soil. then I think the risks could be taken a bit more. Like, if everyone was struggling, we're thinking this is going to be another ass whooping. We might as well give them a shot. Do you know what I mean? Like, letting the kids have a run in the FA Cup or whatever. But
does that work the other way, though? Because if you've got players playing well and can bring these players up and win a Ryder Cup for them, imagine Ludvig Åberg. All right, Alex Fitzpatrick's a bit different because, I don't know, I suppose, no, because he's been a pro longer than Åberg. Is probably a fair argument for both of them. They're probably the two of the rawest ability who shouldn't really be considered. But if we're using the concept that you think, if we're going to pick one of those to get the nod, like, who do you put in there? And like you say, because them other four are playing well, if you put an Åberg with a Rory McIlroy and they beat a Max Homer and Scotty Scheffler 5-4 on day one.
Yeah, but what if they melt?
And get beat 5-4? That's the risk you take. But I think that's what's fun about it. You know, you'd have never have said at the beginning of the year, Rory McIlroy and Ludvig Åberg are going to be a partnership in the Ryder Cup.
No, nobody is apart from you.
Fair play. But like, yeah, I don't know.
You're going on like the papers are reporting.
It's just me.
Just come out your
my little head. It's the lack of sleep that baby feeds, night feeds.
In it?
Yeah.
Oh my God, sick that.
No, but I honestly do like the concept of, because last time at Whistling Straits, we did get such a beating and it was sort of the older guys like your Poulters.
See, but that's, I mean, they're getting picked on merit now that they've been took out. It does open these questions, so that's why probably
you're thinking in them ways. It's the changing of the tide.
The guard's changing. It's like, if you're going to put a rookie in, you might as well put a full rookie
change
in.
Change of the guard is a change of the tide, or is that, it's both, in it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
The tide changes, yeah. Come
on. Are you right there?
Yeah.
So, it's been forced upon the European team, this change.
Yeah.
Because of Liv. So, now, if you're going to play a rookie, why not play a full rookie? It makes no difference.
Well, this is it. Yeah, like, what do we benefit from more? You know, picking Pablo Larrazabal, who's playing really, really good golf at the moment, but has been around for a long time, and this is probably his one and only shot, potentially, of playing a Ryder Cup, and you give him that moment. Or do you say, no, I'm going to pick someone younger and a bit more rawer, and know that this is the future European Ryder Cup team?
That's it. I think, like, them, the Højgaards, like, they've got to be making some sort of appearance this year.
Yeah.
One of them.
What's the 19 years of age? Yeah, take both 20, of them. 19, 20 years of age. Well, you look at Nick, if you're going to pick anybody, I know Rasmus won a couple of weeks ago, but Nikolai is probably a bit more experienced and tuned to playing against that better caliber of players because he's been playing on the PGA Tour and he's got his temporary membership.
Mm.
So, experience wise,
good.
Yeah, and he finished second at the Butterfly Open or whatever it's called.
The Butterfly Open?
What's it called? The Butter something?
Oh, Butter on Toast.
Ah, yeah. It's a baby rain again.
The Barracuda.
The other one?
The Barbasol.
The other one? Yes. The Butterfly.
Fill me up.
yeah, and then do you know who else got an invite this week? Lee Slattery.
Ah, is he, yeah.
In the field this week, yeah. So great opportunity for Lee to get himself back as a more regular starter on the DP World Tour. He's played a few challenge tours these past couple of weeks, but he's got the invite to play on the Czech Masters this week. So
nice.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
What did that come about from?
Is he a past winner?
No, I don't think so.
Did he win this now?
Or maybe, actually.
Because that's the only thing I can think of, is maybe he's a past winner. Otherwise, yeah, because he's not won on the Challenge Tour.
He hasn't won, like, since he's rejoined it, has he?
No.
No, he's won the Russian and the Madrid Masters.
Because if you look at his last few events, he's finished tied 38, tied 38, tied 39th, tied 26th, tied 28th. So, yeah, I mean, he can't be off recent form. But no. He's got the invite anyway. He's got the nod. So, yeah, good luck to Lee playing there this week anyway.
Definitely.
Right then, Tour Championships, the final event of the season.
Eastlake Country Club. I got the yardage of 7,374 yards. Is that what you got?
It was, yeah.
Yeah. So, the top 30, the stage is set. The format I'm not into, but we move.
We do. We've spoke about it, haven't we? Yeah, I think it does open it up to a good event, I think, regardless of what you think. I like the fact that anybody can win it now. You know, you've had a good season. You've earned your 10 under.
I know for a fact it makes great telly.
Yeah.
And it makes it better. And everyone will tune in and it brings more money and it brings more eyes. I get that. I just don't think it's the fairest way to do it.
Yeah, which is fair. It's a fair point.
Well, thank you. I'm glad that my opinion matters now. 20 seconds ago, it got legged.
No, I think your point is fair. You know, if somebody has an amazing season, wins 10 events, two majors, they're still only going to start at 10 under.
Exactly.
So in that circumstance.
Well, imagine Tiger in 2000.
But there's no Tigers no more.
Imagine Tiger, use your brain a second, baby head. 2000,
yeah,
goes to the FedEx playoffs. And he's got a two-shot lead after butchering everyone.
Yeah, and you could genuinely argue that was unfair if Tiger never goes and doesn't win that. You know, somebody at 7 under goes and beats him in the Tour Championship. You could argue that.
Someone at level,
but
can
I just
beat
think,
him.
But I just think, given how good the players are now, like Scottie Scheffler, John Rahm, and Rory McIlroy. For the last 2 years, I've been the best three players in the world.
Exactly, and Jordan Spieth, who's been crabbing it around, can actually win the whole thing.
But he's coming back from 10 shots.
Doesn't
which I
matter.
Think if you win, if
he
you
come
win
back from 7 shots in a final round, back yeah, nine.
But I know, but I think if you win from a 10-shot deficit against players of that caliber, you've got to think of what's in front of him. It's not just Scottie Scheffler 10 shots ahead of him. It's Victor Hovland 8. It's Rory and Rahm 7, 7 and 6. You know, it's not just. Like they are the best of the best, and they have got a major lead. So for Spieth to beat any of them and come from level par to 10 under would be phenomenal, and he deserves to be the Tour champion if he does that.
So I don't think he does.
Because it's over 4 rounds, it's 72 holes. It's not like he's having a good 18 holes. He's got to really, and East Lake's not easy. So you don't go round East Lake and butcher it. You just don't do that. So he's not going to go 8 under, 8 under, 8 under, 8 under. And if he does, I think he deserves to win.
No, I don't.
Okay, we're not going to agree, are we?
No.
But, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Who do you think will win then? Obviously, there's nothing you can do about
Rory
it now.
McIlroy.
I think Rory will win, yeah. Our picks are going to be similar, you know, I just know it. We haven't, there's no update on the leaderboard yet, so no. I know you had a good week.
I had a pop 4 top 10, mate.
You had 2 top 10s, yeah. Tom Kim finished top 10 as well. He was pot 2, was he?
Pot 3, Pockim. Pockim.
Pockim.
Pockim, man. No, I think he was pot 2, you know.
Yeah, he was.
Tommy, Kim.
Putnam.
No, Bradley. Pot 3, and then Putnam, pot 4.
And Tommy just finished outside the top 20 as well with a bit of a poor finish. Yeah. At one point, I had 3 players in the top 20. In the end, it was only Sam Burns. Finished tied 15th for my pick. So you've definitely caught me points-wise this week, but I just don't know whether how close you're going to be going into this final round. So
I think overall, I'm ahead of you.
Not a chance.
I think we're only 200 points behind, you know?
Yeah, and I...
No, 100 and something points behind.
You wasn't.
Honestly, I was, you know? We'll have a look at that. We'll post that.
Yeah, okay. Right. Let's get it. So you think Rory's going to win? So he's pot 1.
Rory pot 1. Yeah,
I've picked Rory pot 1. Yeah, I just think he's got what it takes to catch Scotty. Scotty's put us off a bit. Pot 2, Tommy.
Yeah,
I've got Tommy. Fucking hell. Pot 3, Jordan Spieth.
Nah, Tom Kim.
Tom Kim. Okay. And pot 4,
Burns.
Sam Burns. Yeah, same. It's all riding on pot
3.
I had
Spieth in pot 4, but then obviously it's on the odds, not the position.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, Spieth's pot 3, yeah.
Yeah.
What's interesting about this is there's only 30 players, as we know, in this, and put higher points start from top 20. So a lot can happen this week because there's only space for 9 people to just get regular points.
See, this is another thing where Richard Healy could listen to this, listen to the podcast and be like, you know what, Kev is exactly right. I have led this all season and now they're giving away like top 20s, like when there's only 30 players. Like this, everyone could catch him.
I don't even know if Healy's going to be leading after this week because Graham Lowther was close.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's...
I do know what you mean, yeah. But, you know, it's a season-long order of merit, isn't it? It's not a... It doesn't finish the BMW Championships. It finishes this week, so you've got to keep
But you know what I mean? Like, if you've only got 30 players and you've only got four picks, then the odds of getting a top 20 and a top 10, like, points are going to be rife.
Yeah, they are. So it's, again, if Richard Healy doesn't pick the players that are going to be rife with points, then he's not going to win. So it's all about your selections. Like, you know, he could pick Scotty Scheffler, and Scotty Scheffler could shoot 5 over 5 over first 2 days and not even be in the points. He could be out of it. That's the point of it.
Yeah.
He could pick Rory McIlroy, who shoots 5 under 5 under and has got an 8-shot lead going into round 3.
It's great. No, I do. I do get the excitement. I don't know. I think there's a middle ground to be found.
I think it's a good way to end the season, and I think the point system works well because nobody's run away with it. So there is an opportunity for potentially 2 or 3 people to win this overall.
Yeah.
Maybe in one of them, hopefully, because I was third. I'm just not sure whether...
I'm just ruining that 15 points at whatever that was. That was a couple of weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah.
15 points, man.
I know. Before we finish on Scotty Scheffler's putting, then, just to conclude the podcast, I had a thought, obviously, Lucas Glover, over the last 2 weeks previous to the BMW Championship, went back-to-back winning after, you know, struggling for so long with his putting. He's found this new putter. There's arguments that, is it potentially anchoring?
Is it not anchoring?
Based on what?
Based on he doesn't anchor it to his body.
He doesn't know, but it's close, isn't it?
So it's Adam Scott.
Yeah.
He literally went to the thing and said, give me Adam Scott's putter. It's exactly the same. Don't even care about it. Give me the same putter.
Who did?
Glover.
Oh, did he? Yeah.
He says in his interview after the one of the
brilliant.
Things.
Brilliant, didn't know that.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's obviously...
If anyone's anchoring, Bryson is.
Yeah, the arm lock.
Mm.
Yeah.
And then, have you seen Matteo Manassero's now?
No.
So Manassero is the same. It's like the same as Bryson's, but instead of having his... Bryson's got his hand on the thing.
Oh, he spins it round, doesn't he?
He puts his hand on like...
I have seen it. Yeah, I have seen it. So, do you know, on that point then, obviously, Scotty Scheffler's, it's known he's struggling with his putting, and if he puts well, does he turn into Tiger 2000-esque and win every event? Because Tita Green, he's unstoppable. So, the question is...
He literally posted that just before you asked the question. This is what he said on the golf, remember? He said, Scheffler's stats are only beaten for this season by Tiger in 06. They're the only, since ShotLink began,
right.
This is the only season where anyone's been better. This is the only one season better, and it's Tiger 06. But Tiger 06 played 15 events, won 8, and won 6 in a row to finish the season.
So, Scotty Scheffler had a statistic where for so long he didn't finish outside the top 12.
Yeah.
And the argument there is that if he putted, yeah, well... 100%. He could have had those same statistics.
100%.
So over this fall season, while he's got a break, obviously Ryder Cup is obviously going to be in there as well. But over this fall season, while he has a break, before he gets back at the Century Tournament of Champions in January, does he look to do something? Given how well Glover has transformed his putting from yipping it and not even being able to hold putts from 3 foot, 4 foot, to actually going out and winning back-to-back tournaments under pressure in the best fields in golf, you know, does Scotty Scheffler do that? And then does there become a more of a question around that method of putting?
Yeah, why not? Try. Like Glover was saying, he was going to go broom handle, longer belly putter, chin putter, left-handed. That was his route. He's like, that's how bad it's got.
Yeah.
That was my next preferred route. If one didn't work, I was going to the next one. If that didn't work, I was going left-handed. I've been there myself. Like, I've considered buying a left-handed putter. Joe Murray done it.
Never had a problem, me.
I know, yeah. That's because you haven't got a clue.
Well, easier putting for 8-foot bogeys, though.
Yeah.
Pressure off.
Like, as soon as you see a 40-footer go in, like, it builds your confidence. Like, Dan, you do that regularly.
I know. But no, I just wanted to pose that question because it is, if we look at the review of the golf season, Scotty Scheffler potentially could have had, we could have been talking him in the same breath as Tiger Woods.
Like, obviously, that's work for Glover, but I think for Scheffler, it don't matter what putter. I think for Scheffler and for Tommy, it's mental. They hit it too good, too close, too many times, and that frustration's got to build. Missed it. You know what I mean? You keep missing them. Whereas Glover, obviously when he was putting bad, that putt was still for a 59, for a 59, wasn't it? Then for a 60.
Yeah.
So he's three putter, then every all the emphasis on the stroke, but fucking hell, how good are you playing to be having a putt for a 59?
Yeah. And then, how well are you putting prior to it?
And then you've had a couple of yips and a couple of misses and that, and it's I think it's very, it's highlighted a lot more than how bad it actually is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
I get what you're saying about everything else, but on the Scottie Scheffler point, it is highlighted more, but he does knock it close.
Exactly.
And he should be converting.
He should be, yeah.
But a lot more. And even on 17, three putting there, if he two puts it, he's still got a chance to birdie 18 and take it to a playoff.
No, he does need that. He needs sort. He's putting needs sorting, like, but
I just think it obviously number one player in the world, number one player in the FedEx. He's obviously not doing anything bad. He's playing well, but he could be dominating.
Could be,
and when you've got someone that's dominating, it's a lot more fun to watch, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because everyone's chasing that. Well,
not
one
really,
player.
Because he's only got a two shot lead, but go on. But yeah, no, I think, listen, if Scheffler made a couple of changes or even just changed his mindset, or like Bob Rotella putting out your mind or going to see whoever, get the numbers or changing to aim point or whatever he needs to do, he's obviously going to try and improve his weaknesses, isn't he?
Yeah.
That's like who he is.
So, there's a lot more to put on than the stroke, isn't there?
I had four lessons with Lee Sullivan.
Yeah.
And not once did he mention my stroke.
It's interesting. It's all part and parcel of the puzzle that's golf, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a bastard.
But yeah, we'll be back next week, won't we, to talk about the conclusion of the Bogey Boys Fancy Golf League, of the
FedEx.
PGA Tour, the FedEx, getting ready for the Ryder Cup. Obviously, the European Tour is going to be the main focus of the podcast for the conclusion of the season, but then we've also got the fall season to consider when people vying for those PGA Tour cards, haven't you?
And we can talk about me and Ali. I'm taking on you and Vaughnie, because you and Vaughnie are the dream team, aren't you?
Me and Spearin, it was.
Oh, was you and Spearin?
It was you and Vaughnie.
Oh, yeah. I can't be gone with him again.
All right, then.
You don't want to throw the balls up. Me and you against them two.
You sure you want that?
I don't know, man. Throw the balls up.
We'll be back next week to tell you how Wednesday Hillside Golf Club went anyway.
Boom.
But until then, we'll see you all soon.
Ciao.
Ladies and gentlemen, oh boy, is he on the sink.